Dakota has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Hello and welcome to the show. I'm Ian Stone. I hope you're doing as well as possible, all things considered. And I hope your team won, because at least you had some momentary distraction from the wider world. But you don't have to worry about that for the next hour. Me and my comedy chums are going to be running the rule over the big football stories of the week. We'll be talking Abramovich, of course, substitute goalkeepers for penalty shootouts and blatant VAR mistakes. And because we have a fan on the show, we'll be asking the age-old question, what's it really like to support Tottenham? So stick with us, because the football's on. Yes, this is the show where comedians get together to talk football. No punditry, just opinions with jokes. Our guests this week are two young men whose combined age really upsets me. It's Ivo Graham and Rhys James. Good morning, chaps.
Morning.
Ivo.
Good morning, Ian.
Ivo, what have you noticed this week?
I've been keeping tabs, Ian, haven't we all, on Daniel Sturridge's Twilight Months at Perth Glory, hailed last autumn by Perth Glory's chairman Tony Sage as one of the most significant signings in the history of the A-League, to which you want to go, it's one of the most significantly self-parodying signings in the history of the A-League. You are signing a player who is sadly over the hill and injury prone to a country where people can barely get society started again. Sturridge had to isolate for 2 weeks after he arrived. He had to isolate at Christmas because of a close contact. He caught COVID in January, and now in, I think, only his fifth substitute appearance, he's got a groin injury, and I think that might be the end of his time at Perth Glory. What a time to move to Australia to play out the rest of one's years in the A-League.
He'll probably never be able to leave as well. I also think calling a team Glory is a little bit presumptuous, wouldn't you say, Rhys?
Yeah, well, as a fan of Glory, Glory Tottenham Hotspur, yes, I think people regret that sort of thing eventually.
Quite. What about you, Rhys? What you noticed?
I noticed on Match of the Day 2 that pundit Stephen Warnock described Jurgen Klopp's playing style as Gangnam-style football. Now, listen, I don't know much about Stephen Warnock's music tastes, about his back catalogue. I do know that there is a certain genre of music that has been used to describe Klopp's playing style, and no one could say that Gangnam Style is heavy metal. Okay, in no one's definition is gang. But I looked up some of the lyrics to Gangnam Style, the English translation, and some of them, I'll read them to you now. A guy who seems calm but plays when he plays. A guy who goes completely crazy when the right time comes. And a guy who has bulging ideas rather than muscles. So maybe Stephen Warnock was onto something.
Yes, bulging ideas rather than muscles. It's quite hard to get
out
of your head.
Liverpool, in tribute to Stephen Warnock, celebrating their next trophy with the full Gangnam Style, including obviously a horse, and then my personal favourite from the video, when he's just looking at a bum like he can't even believe it exists. That's my fave.
Yes. All right, so Roman Abramovich tried to pass over the stewardship of Chelsea to the trustees of the Chelsea Foundation. But like Ray Liotta in Goodfellas, he planned to give the hot weapon to his girlfriend's mum to keep in the bin, and he'd come and pick it up when things had cooled down a bit, but the trustees were unsure. Presumably because they didn't want to be left holding the parcel when the music stopped and Roman had to look elsewhere. If anyone wants to look after Chelsea for a short while, let us know and we'll pass your name on. Ivo, is it like Andy Warhol almost said everyone will look after Chelsea for 15 minutes?
Yes, I didn't know very much about the Chelsea Charitable Foundation before this week. It doesn't sound like the most sort of convincing enterprise. And I mean, I think the Goodfellas reference is a lovely one. But yeah, I mean, I'm delighted to see Petr Cech given even more responsibility. I thought him remonstrating with Chelsea fans about the Super League last year was one of the most sort of iconic images of that particular fracas. Arguably, this is an even more significant promotion at an even more stressful historical moment. But, you know, I'm nothing if not excited about the rapid promotion of Petr Cech, who's still, I think, on the books as Arsenal's, as Chelsea's third choice keeper, not as Arsenal's. But there was a point last season, I think, where he became sort of a legitimate member of the playing staff again. And after the events at Wembley, you've got to think, is he now number two again?
We'll get to that. We'll get to that. Rhys, do you think people are using what's happening as an excuse for a bit of Chelsea bashing? I mean, I know I am.
Well, you know, I think you've got to take any chance you can get. I mean, it's been quite a good week for Chelsea bashing in general. I just like that Roman Abramovich has said, you know, you can have it. You can run Chelsea in the meantime. And all the trustees are saying, no, thank you. This is the opposite of succession. There is no drama here to be had at all. There is no rivalry going on. Everyone's going, I'm all right, mate. Don't want it. Not interested. I didn't know that a football club could be run by a charity. I didn't, like, the fact that it's like going to the Chelsea Foundation or the Charitable Trust or whatever. It's like, are we now going to get to a stage where every football club is claiming they're run by some sort of charity? I understand some have been easier than others. Spurs is obviously Comic Relief and Leeds is Crisis, you know. But we get to a point where people get increasingly desperate and you've got Watford claiming they're run by the Countryside Alliance. I mean, where does it end, Ian?
There, because I can't think of any more, to be honest with
you. I've got one. Arsenal, Donkey Sanctuary. Move on.
I knew you'd have one. These poor Arsenal players are suffering. Look at Bukayo Saka carrying the entire team. Yeah, I can see that advert. Yeah. Ivo, do you think the summer spending at Chelsea might be somewhat curtailed?
I don't know. I mean, it's obviously there's a lot of pressure on Marina Granovskaya and Petr Cech. They've got these big decisions ahead of them. Are they going to exercise Tino Livramento's buyback clause? Will it be easier to make that decision without Roman breathing down their neck? It's difficult to say. I was quite excited by Chelsea's potential contribution to the title race at the start of this season and the sort of general buzz around the club last summer. But it does feel like it's now just millstones. Bringing on Timo Werner and Romelu Lukaku on Sunday afternoon, it was double millstone.
Yeah, I mean, the joke going round, of course, is that they'll take the whole club off Roman Abramovich, but they'll let him keep Romelu Lukaku. Rhys, could there be a fire sale at Chelsea? I mean, I was wondering about this. What if Rhys James was bought by Spurs? Would that be too weird for you?
Well, listen, I'm currently in a situation where I have to put Rhys James in my fantasy team just for my own mental health so I don't wish ill on him every week because he's ruining my career. Look at me. You know, I had dreams, Ian. But my Google alert is a nightmare. So every week I'm sort of like, oh, do I sort of hope that something happens where he can't play him? I thought, no, that's a horrible way to think. Put him in your fantasy team so you can back him. So if he played for Spurs, it would make my life a lot easier. I don't have to have him in the team. We finally solve our several decades long right back problem, which is particularly at its worst at the moment. I'd love him at Spurs, but purely for namesake reasons, really.
Yeah. Although, you know, Matt Doherty scored at the weekend, but we'll perhaps talk about that in a short while. In the wider football world, things have been moving fast in the last few days as UEFA and FIFA have acted to ban all Russian teams from all football competitions. Although some critics have said that could open up a Pandora's box, within which, no doubt, you would find a slightly smaller Pandora's box. I had to do that for contractual reasons. I can only apologise. Meanwhile... On the pitch, Chelsea played in the Carabao Cup final at Wembley at the weekend, and it's fair to say that the football world were not cheering them on. Chelsea lost to Liverpool on penalties, and everyone rejoiced. And the fact that they lost in the funniest way possible was an added bonus. Ivo, was Kepa's performance in a penalty shootout as bad as it could possibly be?
I think it's the definition of as bad as it could possibly be.
Yes.
You know, it was so satisfying. In its completeness, you literally the last person of the 22 hitting the worst possible penalty after saving none of his 11 penalties he was brought on to try and save, including one with Van Dijk where he moved to one half of the goal in a sort of mind game and Van Dijk still beat him in that half of the goal.
Yeah,
it was of you know very little emotional weight in the Kepa corner after the Carabao antics of a couple of years ago, which again add another level of narrative backstory and poetic cruelty to this. It was heaven, Ian. It was heaven.
I have to agree. The look that Van Dijk gave Kepa when he hit that penalty amazing. Was really stunning. Kepa couldn't look at him, could he? Reese, what do you think of this idea of bringing on specialists in particular situations?
Insane.
I mean, if Spurs needed someone to dive to win a penalty, would they get Son to start warming up?
Right, I'll ignore that bit. What I will say is, yeah. Harry Kane's our diver. What I will say is, the thing about bringing someone on, bringing particularly a goalkeeper, but even a penalty taker, specifically for a shootout, is what it does is it makes every other fan in the world want you to lose. So yes. What happened on Sunday was just 5 million WhatsApp prayers being answered. The amount of people who said, oh my God, wouldn't it be great if Kepa has to take the lot? Once they got through like 6 or 7 penalties, it was, oh my God, this is going to happen. It's going to happen. It's what everyone wanted. Ian, I'm a jobbing comedian, all right? I see a lot of stand-up comedy. That is the most I've laughed for years when he skied that penalty. It was flawless. And I tell you who breathed a sigh of relief is David De Gea, because he had a pretty identical situation in the Europa League final, if you remember, but he wasn't subbed on for it. And now no one will ever talk about David De Gea going through 22 penalties and just missing his ever again, because we'll only ever go, oh yeah, but it's not as bad as Kepa.
It has worked in the past. I mean, it worked in the Super Cup. They brought Kepa on and they won that game. But Ivo, is the problem the players are just getting too good at penalties? Do we need to change shootout rules? 2 goalkeepers, maybe blindfolds, catering staff take the first 5, walk into the spot.
Well, no,
now
I mean,
it's Mavis from the hot dog stand.
While it's absolutely lovely to see your brainstorming mind at full velocity, Ian, I think it's probably more. And we'd all love to see a few more members of the catering staff brought in, but I do think watching elite players under pressure is the main fun of a penalty shootout. And recent experiences as an English fan have gone to show that there's just as much capability of bringing on people who are meant to be good at taking penalties, only for them to fail at that task. So really, the two, you know, can cancel each other out. I think it's quite exciting to watch penalties be, you know, dispatched as well as Van Dijk's was, or like the Harry Maguire one at the Euros final. I just think that I think that this new keeper thing, I think of it as the Tim Krul decision, because that was the first time I remember it in 2014, Netherlands against Costa Rica. Yes. A penalty shootout so iconic that it was then used as a plot point in the Sally Rooney novel Normal People. You know, so it just goes to show that the reverberations of last minute keeper changes are felt all over the sporting and literary world. But no, I think you've got to do the whole job yourself. If I am meandering my way through an anecdote on stage at a Saturday night comedy club and I get heckled, I can't bring someone else on to do the sick burns for me. I have to do what I always do, which is put my head down and continue with the anecdote and just not even engage.
Do you know what? I'm going to be thinking about that next time I see someone struggling.
You need to bring on your heckler expert.
Now, I watched the Manchester City versus Everton game on Saturday, and the ovation for the Ukrainian players Alexander Sinchenko and Vitaly Mykolenko before the game was a very moving moment. Neither of them got on for the game, and neither did Jack Grealish, who also sat on the bench for the entirety. Remember, it was only 7 months ago the entire country was willing him to be brought on for England at the Euros. Reese, should he have stayed at Villa?
Well, I think it's an interesting one with Jack Grealish, because he faced a choice, didn't he? A real sort of crossroads where he could stay at Villa, be a big fish in a smaller pond, be an absolute club legend forever, never buy a drink locally again, become a Birmingham hero, or he could watch Man City every week from really close to the pitch. And I don't think he made that bad of a choice, if I'm honest. He's going to win the league. I mean, he's probably going to win the league, whether he's that involved or not. Yeah, he's not playing as much as he was, but he's going to get to win the league, and he's at Man City, so he gets to meet Noel Gallagher. You know, who's he meeting at Villa? David Cameron, when he remembers who he supports? I mean, it's perfect. It's going to be the first time that a Premier League medal turns up in a Boohoo Man billboard, and I think we deserve that as a country, frankly.
But he's not playing. You made the point, Reese. He's not playing. I mean, Ivo, is it enough to be on the bench with better players? When he's in the shower cubicle and he says to the bloke in the next cubicle, can I borrow your soap? That guy will be on 300 grand a week. Now, you don't get that at Villa. It's probably really nice soap. But is that enough?
Once again, there's a huge amount to process from the last 20 seconds. is a single bar of admittedly very nice soap being passed from player to player? And is that going to be the sort of focal point of Jack Grealish's envy? I think it's all right, to be honest. I think, you know, it's a glamorous life. Man City uploaded a video of him at the Expo in Dubai last week, doing some very sweet content with young City fans and other local opportunists. The video was trailed as young fans can ask Jack Grealish anything they want, to which you'd think the question, much as we've been discussing today, would be, do you regret the decisions you've made in the last 6 months of your life? Whereas they went with a slightly different tack of, have you ever flown a kite? And which Man City player would you most like to be for a day? To which Jack Grealish's response was, Scott Carson, because he's really funny. So you've got to say, when people talk about, yeah, Jack Grealish isn't playing, but he's getting to mix with the very best of them. You're not talking about playing with Kevin De Bruyne in training. It's just picking up some of those sweet, sweet Carson gags.
I mean, those moments when they say, ask any question you like on Twitter, they always make me wince a little bit, really. I always ask, it doesn't matter who it is, I always ask when they're going to finish the roadworks on the 4 Street Tunnel on the A406. I never got an answer yet. You know, Lady Gaga didn't know, weirdly. I should mention that we're taking the footballs on the road. On 23rd of March, we'll be doing a live show in London's glittering West End at the Leicester Square Theatre. You can buy tickets on the link below. You'll be able to see me, Jeff Norcott, Sean Walsh and Lloyd Griffith in the flesh. And that's it for the first part of the show. When we return, we'll be asking why so many people think it was the wrong move to sack a manager whose team has let in 20 goals in the last 5 games. And as we need a bit of good news right now, we'll be rejoicing in the feel-good story of the season so far. See you after the break. Part 2 of the Football Zone with me, Ian Stone, Reece James and Ivo Graham. So, to paraphrase the last line in the advert's seminal 1978 punk hit Gary Gilmore's Eyes, Marcelo Bielsa and Leeds have parted company. Yes, a love story for the ages ended after a 4-0 home defeat to Tottenham. Reece, have you no romance in you at Spurs?
Well, it's just such a final straw these days, isn't it? You can lose to whoever you want, but if you lose to a Spurs who have just shipped several goals against Wolves, Burnley and Southampton, you're out, you're done, you're toast. I'm sorry, that's the curse of Tottenham. That's the way it's going to be for a while. But look, I love Bielsa. I think he was great. Main thing I loved about him was that he is able to squat for such lengths at 66. It's very impressive. I wonder how that affects the management. He's got very low vantage point for the match. I mean, how much can you really see going on when you're literally at feet level? That's like a golfer lining up a putt. It makes no sense to me. But my favourite part about Bielsa entirely is that he never fully learned English for the press conferences. He always had a translator. And there must have been a tipping point where he was like, okay, I probably should start learning it. And then Leeds start losing 4-0 every game. And he's like, I might not be here for that long. Do I really want to just learn the phrase, thank you for the opportunity? Shall I just leave it?
I think it's a perfectly fair point, though. What happens to the interpreter, Ivo?
What happens to the interpreter? Well, the new manager, Mr. Marsh, is American. And I'd say his predecessor in terms of the last American manager in the Premier League was Bob Bradley at Swansea, who did things like calling a penalty a PK in a press conference. So there's an argument to say that the interpreter for Bielsa could just pivot to being a sort of embarrassment shield. And whenever Jesse Marsh is going to say anything too American, could just step in as a sort of smokescreen. Because even though this guy has obviously got great credentials and has done some fantastic stuff with the various Red Bulls, there is, I think, still a certain amount of cynicism, much more than towards a foreign manager who can't speak English in the Premier League, towards an American manager with overly American phraseology.
Well, we'll see. He managed at Leipzig for 5 months, so obviously that went well. Rhys, does Bielsa just take the bucket and leave? Do you think that's his personal bucket?
Yeah, that's him. That's he doesn't need to clean out a locker so much as just sort of stand up and grab his little stool. Yeah, I mean, I feel for the guy. He sort of lasted longer than a lot of managers would, wouldn't he? Because of his relationship with the Leeds fans. It's one of those weird things when a manager is losing a lot and every Leeds fan I know was gutted. But sort of it's one of those, like, it's like putting down an old dog, isn't it? You sort of know that it has to happen, but we don't really want to do it. But it's for his own good. You can't keep losing to teams like Spurs at the moment.
When my dog died as a child and my parents brought in Sam Allardyce, I thought that was a very, very, very tactless decision.
They brought in that American dog, didn't they?
God, this is bleaker than I thought it was going to be, to be honest with you. Anyway, as I said beforehand, we need a bit of good news right now. Brentford lost at the weekend to Newcastle, and their flirtation with relegation has moved on to the heavy petting stage. But in the 52nd minute, football fans from around the world took a moment to celebrate as Christian Eriksen was brought on for his first football action since that horrible day in June when he almost lost his life. Rhys, it's a great story, isn't it? I mean, personally, I cannot wait to boo him for being an ex-Tottenham player.
I mean, absolutely soulless stuff. I mean, if you're there booing him, I'm gonna make sure someone's filming it so you get cancelled, actually. every Arsenal fan cancelled.
He'd appreciate it. He knows what football rivalry is. Of course he would. He'd find it funny.
Do you think it's one of those things where he'd think, if I'm not being booed, it must be really serious? They're not even having a laugh anymore. So, oh my God, it's not even a joke. You know, like if you do something really embarrassing and no one mentions it and you go, oh, that was really embarrassing and not even being bantered about it. Well, I mean, it's insanely impressive that he's back. I'd have loved him back at Spurs. Conte did sort of hint at maybe someday. I mean, he's exactly the sort of player that we need to replace Christian Eriksen that we still haven't used. So we could really do with the Christian Eriksen type to fill that Christian Eriksen hole that we've left. I can't wait to see him back at Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. It's remarkable to recover from that. It's remarkable, I think, when footballers recover from any injury. I had a bad back a while ago that made me unable to exercise for 2 months, and I got the bad back sleeping. So I don't understand how footballers do it, frankly.
I injured my hip getting out of a car. It's all right. It happens. This is a conversation you will have more and more approach middle age. Ivo, it is literally a resurrection, though, isn't it?
Well, it is. And it's given this extra weirdly sort of poetic little neatness by the fact that he came on, I think, for Brentford, replacing the Dane Mathias Jensen, who was the guy that replaced him in Denmark, Finland last summer.
Oh, I hadn't realised that.
Yes, I don't know how many pubs you're going to be able to light up with that trivia over the coming days, but...
Lads, I've got something for you.
I don't know if that's the reason why he went to Brentford, just so that he could give me that stat for this particular moment. But, you know, it does feel, you know, not to make light of the original horrific moment and some of the sort of coverage that emerged from that, but there was a lot that was so lovable about just the whole Danish response to that in the tournament last
standing round him as he was getting CPR. That was amazing.
And then their performances sort of later on in the tournament.
Yes.
I remember I went to watch England versus Denmark, and I paid the ultimate show of respect, which is I brought a sort of a long distance torch, which I shone on Kasper Schmeichel throughout the game to show just how much I respected him and his teammates.
Yeah.
I also like that Eriksen put up an Instagram post remarkably quickly after the incident in which he said he was doing fine in the circumstances, which is the expression I've used more than any other expression over the last couple of years to refer to the most banal things. Like, I'm doing fine. A few of my meetings have switched to Zoom, and, I don't always remember to log in time, rather than I've just had a heart attack on television.
Yes, yes. He will make Brentford better, won't he, Rhys? That's the point. I mean, they are in need of something.
Yeah, and actually, like I was saying, that filling that hole that he left at Spurs is like there's so many games that I've watched Tottenham play recently that aren't dissimilar to the sorts of games we played under Poch when we were actually doing quite well, failing to break down teams. But what would happen in those days is it would get to the 85th minute and Eriksen would just go, all right, I'll shoot then from 40 yards and it would go in. And no one's certainly hitting the target when we do that at the moment. So even if he can only play, I mean, it seems like he is completely athletic and fine, but even if he can only play, say, the last 20 minutes of every game, that's where he scores every single time. Get a free kick, get him to just kick it from the edge of the box, and he's just going to score loads of goals for Brentford and he'll be perfect. I love him.
Yeah, I think we all do. And we wish him all the best. As Rhys is on the show, we wanted to talk Tottenham before thrashing Leeds at the weekend. They'd lost 4 out of the last 5 league games, the only win coming in the most Tottenham way possible at the Etihad against Manchester City. And 4 days later, also in a very Tottenham way, they went to Burnley and lost 1-0. And Antonio Conte went on TV and basically asked to be sacked. Just another week in the Spurs soap opera. Rhys, what's it like being a Tottenham fan?
What it's like is, you know the famous gif of Roy Hodgson looking extremely hopeful on the touchline?
Yes.
Yeah, that Ivo's reenacting now, and then suddenly, oh, it hasn't worked out, very disappointed. It's like that every month for your whole life. That's how it feels. Constantly like, oh my God, we've turned a corner. Oh no, we've turned another corner. It's basically horrible. The worst part of all of it is social media, right? Because Spurs are such a banter club, and I happen to have made the mistake of publicly declaring myself a Spurs fan. Why else would you have an Eric Dier shirt? So every time I do any kind of tweet on social media, like a completely irrelevant, oh, I've got a work in progress show coming up, tickets here. People go, oh, your team's a work in progress. Or I go, did some gag the other day about how I can't grow a beard. And someone said, your team can't grow trophies. But the only time, it's not good stuff. The only time that I don't get a tweet about Spurs being rubbish is if I tweet about Spurs being rubbish and then the replies go, well, good material for you though. And I go, yes, that's why I'm plugging a work in progress show. Come on. What do I have to do?
Your team can't grow trophies. I mean,
can't grow trophies.
I mean, that is pathetic on every level.
No,
I thought it was quite good. And Rhys, if you would just unblock me, I will stop. Okay. Funny banter between friends. No, I didn't, but I have a lot of respect for any open top bus parade celebrating whatever achievement. There were a lot of times in the late noughties where Arsenal might have had open top bus parades for less. It's worth saying.
Graham.
And I think what's sort of sad is that Spurs increasingly are this sort of this sort of rebound club for former Chelsea managers on the way down. And I really thought Conte was quite an exciting appointment, and he appears to be sort of completely inconsistent and completely mad in most of his things that he's saying after games. Mourinho obviously was a shadow of his former self. You've got to wonder if Luis Felipe Scolari could do a job at this point in the season.
AVB as well, and don't forget.
AVB, of course.
You've had a few. Rhys, I'll ask you this. Is it better or worse to beat Man City and lose to Burnley, or vice versa?
Look, there's not... I think the way round that it happened, while upsetting, had such a Spurs inevitability about it. Every single Spurs fan I know, as soon as that last goal went in against City, was like, yes, we're going to lose against Burnley. But yes, it's not a single person who's watched Spurs for more than a year wouldn't have thought that was going to happen. But that's what makes the last minute winners against City so important. We were coming off the back of 2 defeats that we should have arguably have won, and we played terribly. You know, Harry Kane clearly still trying to get his move to City, going, oh, Pep's definitely watching this one. So that's why, I'd rather beat City in the last minute, and not just because one of my close friends is a City fan, but I don't have any close friends who are Burnley fans. I'm very sorry. It just made it a bit more entertaining for me on WhatsApp that afternoon. But that's the way it's got to be. We're good. Weirdly, we've become a bogey team for Manchester City, the best team in Europe. What's the point in that? It's such a waste of time.
They went down having done the double over Manchester.
Yes, exactly.
We won the league and only lost 2 games all season. That would be very Spursy. But that's the point, Ivo. A lot of clubs are inconsistent, but Spursy is the word that we all use. Is it a bit unfair to have singled them out?
I suppose so. I mean, as you say, the Man City thing, from everyone else's perspective, is quite fun and quite useful. You know, I'm aware that doesn't mean very much to one's own team's lofty aspirations in their, you know, sort of spaceship of a stadium. But, you know, you beat Man City, keeping the Premier League title race sort of more open than it's been for the last few months. And then you lost to Burnley, making the relegation battle more interesting.
Yes.
So
we're doing, you know, God's work. We're show running the Premier League, basically.
It's good stuff to have a couple of these essentially banter teams in the middle, just giving out points to whoever needs them most at that moment in time.
Yes, thank you, Spurs, from all of us in the Premier League. That's almost it for the first half of the show. But before we go for a well-earned half-time rubdown, a quick game of Who Am I? I give out the clues and the panellists have to guess who I'm talking about. OK, chaps, I was born on the 13th of April 1978 and I've played my entire career at one club from 1996 to 2014. At club level, I won the league six times, the cup twice and the Champions League three times, as well as being named in the UEFA Team of the Year six times. And I played 100 times for my country, scoring three goals, and I won a Euros, a World Cup and an Olympic silver medal. Whoever he is, he's pretty good. Who Am I? We'll be back with the answer after the break, when we'll also be bringing you a slightly different version of my favourite game. Part three of The Football's On. I'm Ian Stone and I'm joined by Rhys James and Ivo Graham. In part two, I asked Who Am I? And I gave out these clues. I was born the 13th of April 1978. I played my entire career at one club from 1996 to 2014. At club level, I won the league six times, the cup twice and the Champions League three times, as well as being named in the UEFA Team of the Year six times. And I played 100 times for my country, scoring three goals, and I won a Euros, a World Cup and an Olympic silver medal. Who am I? Rhys, I'll come to you first.
First two clues, I was thinking John Terry. And then he's won some international tournaments, so it can't be him. Euros and a World Cup, you're thinking, and three goals, you're thinking it's a Spanish centre-back. But I can't think of any who'd have retired in 2014, so I will go with Juan Terry, please.
Nice effort, but wrong. Ivo, any
thoughts?
Well,
it feels like Rhys has he's described all of the criteria I was working off and then ruled everyone out. So I'm wondering if my guy, Carlos Puyol, did he retire later than 2014?
Well, no, because it was Carlos Puyol. Very, very, very good. Although I wish, to be honest, it was Juan Terry.
Yeah, he effectively was. That's what they call him over there.
I believe when Spain lifted the World Cup, Juan Terry did turn up in the Spanish kit at the end of the game. In my favourite game this week, we've gone a bit left field. Normally, we ask an ex-player about their favourite games, but referees have favourite games as well. So I spoke to BT Sport's very own refereeing expert, Peter Walton, and asked him for his. Hello, Peter.
Hi, Ian.
Your favourite game. Is your favourite game eight red cards, a pitch battle, escorted from the pitch? General.
No, my favourite game is when nobody knows I actually referee the game. It's Sunday Papers, it's P. Walton, Northamptonshire. That's fine for me.
Right.
That's my favourite game.
All right.
So in my career, perversely, I refereed 499 professional games. Right. Why I stopped on 499, I don't know, but that's how it happened. And one of those games was a playoff game, 2003. It was a playoff championship game, Sheffield United versus Nottingham Forest. And we went out there and the game itself just took over. It was a tremendous game. Forest ran into a 2-0 lead really early on, silenced the crowd. Within the second half, Sheffield United pulled it back. I think Steve Cabba scored with about 8 minutes to go, made it 2-2.
Yeah.
Went into extra time. And of course, we're in extra time and the adrenaline's pumping and this poor ref got cramp. Well, it's OK for players to go down with cramp, but never the referee should go down with cramp. And Paddy Kenny got the ball and he's launched his tremendous kick. I think it's Paul Pescolino played up front for Sheffield United. Went on this mazy run and scores a goal, made it 3-2. But if you look back on the camera, the referee actually never got over the halfway line.
You're lying on the ground.
I was trying to not lie on the ground, in fairness, and I was trying to get there, but I couldn't get there. And, yeah, Sheffield United went out and won the game 4-3 in the end.
You couldn't disallow the goal because you were sort of prone in the
I'd got no idea what was going on, to be honest with you. All I was concerned with was my blooming legs and, you know...
But, sorry, I'm laughing at your pain.
Yeah, that, as
I would have done if I was in the stadium,
well,
I'll be honest with you.
Quite true, if you'd have realised what was going on. But thankfully, the attention was on the game and not on the referee that day. So,
yeah,
so that was a good one.
Yes, that was Peter Walton. That interview actually lasted 4 hours, but we cut it down to 3 minutes. We'll hear more from him in a little while. When you're a neutral, Ivar, I'm sure games can be very entertaining, but I'm not sure I want the ref to enjoy it.
No, well, you probably shouldn't invite refs to participate in a nostalgic feature called My Favourite Game if you don't hear about refs enjoying stuff. But I think in many ways, Ian, it showed your consistency as an interviewer and as a pundit. Because obviously some people wouldn't have the gall to tell Peter Walton to his face that you enjoyed his injury. But you've declared earlier in this show that you're going to boo Christian Eriksen when he comes to the Emirates. So there's no injury too large for Ian to stay silent.
Peter also told us about his most embarrassing moment on a football pitch. Take a look at this.
In my latter days in my career, I had a live TV game, unfortunately for me, at Goodison Park when Everton played Birmingham City in the Premier League. And with about 3 or 4 minutes to go before half-time, chap player for Birmingham City called Jordan Mutch. Yep. And I'm refereeing him, and he did one foul too many. So I said to him, Jordan, don't go away. Here you go. And I reached into my pocket to get the yellow card out. And as soon as I realised my yellow card was on the dressing room table. In the dressing room.
Excellent.
So Jordan stood in front of me and he said, well, come on then, Pete. Well, I said, if I could find a card, I'd give you one. He said, what are you on about? And I just pulled my hand out and put my hand up like that. I said, there you go. And he looked at it. I said, that's your yellow card. And off he went.
Yeah, he forgot his yellow card. He goes round sort of referee dinners telling that story, I believe. When we spoke at the weekend, Reece, the general consensus amongst the production team was that referees don't need to remember a huge amount of stuff. But it turns out that we were very wrong. There's a rather long list of what refs need to bring along. Suit, smart shirt, boot, shorts, shirt. There's a couple of things I don't even know what they are. A battery pack and buzzer, a buzzer pack sleeve, 2 pencils and a whistle. Reece, I'm assuming two pencils is if it's a particularly dirty game and the pencil runs out, I guess.
Yeah, that sounds like a checklist for going orienteering.
Kendall mint cake should be amongst that, shouldn't it, really?
the main takeaway from both of those videos for me is one, that even Peter Walton refers to himself as the referee.
Yeah.
Which I thought was absolute, until at the end when he described himself simply as Peter Walton while pointing at himself. Make your mind up, man. You can just say me. Also, the fact that it's so clear now. Everything makes so much sense now that he said he retired on 499 games, which tells you why he is appearing to do little minutes of refereeing so constantly on BT Sport just to try and make up that 500th game.
He's at 62 minutes.
Yeah, exactly.
After these last two seasons. I mean, even with all that equipment, we still saw some pretty ridiculous refereeing this weekend. Matty Cash of Aston Villa got booked for taking off his shirt and showing a message of support for his Polish mate, Tomasz Kedzioro, who's playing for Dynamo Kyiv. Reece, shouldn't the ref show a bit of discretion in that case?
Yeah, I don't know how it works in terms of whether... Can you appeal yellow cards? I just think if maybe you have to... Maybe you have to abide by the rules in the moment and basically say, listen, lads, you might want to appeal that one. It will get overturned. I just had to do it because you took your shirt off. You know, everyone's just trying to not lose their job, effectively. I don't know. To be honest, I'm not the expert on this. I would suggest that you maybe bring in Peter Walton and ask him what he thinks of that yellow card decision, as I know that BT Sport love to do so often.
Well, you were in luck because he's right here. While we're on the subject... Matty Cash's mate only saw the message because Cash scored. And it did get me wondering, what about all the messages we never see because they never score and because there's a chance of a booking? I mean, if they're on a yellow card and they've got the meaning of life written under there and they think, well, I could enlighten the world, but I'll be suspended for United away.
Well, what is the meaning of life, Ian? What's that written on the shirt?
Well, I don't know because he's never lifted it because he never scored, you see.
Yeah, it must be incredibly bleak, mustn't it? Even like we know that football is pretty laddie as a sport, and you know, you get back in, it's pretty banter heavy in those changing rooms. How bleak must it be taking off your shirt, having not scored, and there being a message there, and all your teammates going, oh, did you think you were going to score, mate? Oh, that's a shame, isn't it? People must just absolutely slam you. It must be so, you must be desperately trying to get unchanged privately and secretly so that no one notices, surely.
Jack Grealish just miserably asking for the expensive soap again.
Yeah.
Just wishing the shirt he could wear was even just a first team shirt at any point.
Yeah. I mean, as for VAR, anyone watching Everton against Manchester City was witness to what I think was the worst decision since the Trojan gatekeeper at Troy said, yeah, bring that horse in. I'm talking about Rodri's handball here. Rhys, what was the VAR Chris Kavanagh looking at?
I've got no idea. I saw a rumour that maybe there was some sort of offside in the build-up, but I just, you know, at what point does that become irrelevant? No one benefited from the offside. It was just Rodri sort of doing some admin, effectively, in defence, and then handballing it. It was, I mean, it's definitely a handball. I don't know what you're possibly... That isn't the whole argument. It's about the T-shirt. Has it hit the T-shirt, or is it below the T-shirt? And it was below the T-shirt. So, but maybe Richarlison was offside or something in the build-up. But how far back are we going to go in these things? You're going to get to a point when it's like, you know, a 90th minute equaliser's ruled out because 6 weeks ago, Richarlison was offside in the build-up and he did some dodgy tweets. Yeah. Let's move on, shall we? Let's live in the moment.
I don't like this T-shirt thing anyway. I mean, I think I mentioned this on the show before, but if John Travolta was playing like in his Grease days, was wearing a cap sleeve T-shirt, that means he could have the ball hit him further up the arm. That's possibly irrelevant to the
exactly.
VAR.
What about the long sleeve shirt? Surely every player now is just going to go back to long sleeves, like the late 90s.
I guess.
Well, I think having now looked at this graphic of the person with the sort of green body and then the red arms so much, I think, and I don't know how this is going to be sustainable over 90 minutes, but everyone's just going to have to paint their arms red. And if there's any red paint on the ball, it's a penalty. that's how it works.
What if it's a warm day and the paint dries?
Yeah, no, it's the match goes into extra time. People are going to have their paint topped up. It's not ideal. You don't need to say the Trojan gatekeeper at Troy, Ian.
Do you know?
Don't condescend to your audience. They know he's at Troy because you've said Trojan.
See, I knew that Ivo would have something to say about my my lack of classical education. I was desperately trying to impress you.
Not your lack of classical education, Ian. Your needless gilding of the classical lily.
We'll re-record that bit. Rhys, Frank Lampard, this was his statement. I've spoken to the referees on the day and they know it's a penalty. It's on Chris Kavanagh, the VAR, because the referee couldn't see it on the pitch. We've lost a point by a professional who can't do his job right. Incompetence at best, at worst, who knows? I mean, that's a bit sort of intriguing, isn't it? You know, was it aliens or something?
Yeah, speaking in riddles, the Frank Lampard way. I love that. At worst, who knows? If you're going to do an at best, at worst, you better have something ready for the at worst. Don't panic. Don't get to at worst and go, I've got nothing here, move on. I mean, it's a classic
it's
Graham
at best,
move.
Incompetence. At worst, also incompetence. That's the only option, actually.
Yeah. It's incompetence.
Do you think he was watching the wrong game? I mean, they've obviously got a lot of tellies in there. He went to the loo at the crucial moment, thought he'd blag it, Ivo. What do you think?
Do I think Frank Lampard went to the loo at the crucial moment?
No, Chris Kavanagh, the VAR.
Oh, so I had to apologise, Ian. I misunderstood the question, which is incompetence at best, sort of cynical attempt to move the conversation on at worst.
Do you think the Trojan at the gate of Troy went to the toilet at the wrong moment? I mean, what about Rhys? What about showing the video to the crowd? They've done it in rugby for years. I imagine that one wouldn't have gone down too well at Goodison.
No, I noticed they did it in the cup final, didn't they? They showed the decision after, which they've now sort of started doing here and there, of saying this is why he's offside and showing you the lines they've drawn. They did it with Lukaku's goal.
Yes.
In the cup final. And the noise from the crowd, I wouldn't describe as positive. It was, this is an insane way to play this game. I don't think, And there would have been riots, surely, if they'd shown that decision. That decision was absolutely ridiculous. And having watched Spurs in a Champions League final, which was ruined in the first minute, where the ball hit much further up the arm, which was given as a penalty, and then to see that not given. Listen, mate. I mainly said that because I wanted to bring up we got to a Champions League final, but I'm not happy.
I know.
And also, Reece, may I say, the paint thing, it would have been absolutely perfect for that one. There'd have been no paint on the ball, but the paint would have been, it would have been beautifully wet. First minute.
Exactly. You're right. It's perfect. I don't know about the red paint in that game, though. It was Liverpool.
Okay. We could debate the colour of the paint later.
Yeah.
Different coloured
paint. Could the paint thing be, could maybe in Johnston's paint trophy games, that's where it's brought in. So then it's a nice sponsor tie-in as well.
Perfect.
Yes, that's a possibility. What's
the problem, Ian? Too surreal a flight of fancy for you?
Possibly, yes. All right, let's talk a bit of Swindon. Let's bring it right back down to earth. Ivo Graham, as we know, is a huge Swindon Town fan and did a rather sweet tweet last week. This was talking about Walsall and about the game where you thrashed Walsall. There it is.
Oh, yes.
There it is, idling my afternoon away, drifting onto Walsall Twitter, basically saying how amazing it was that they're talking about Swindon Town and you can't believe it and you absolutely love it. I mean, I saw the goal that Swindon scored, Ivo. You know, it used to be that top clubs played all the pretty football, but clubs down the League Two, down in League Two, would be lumping it up to a big centre forward and hoping for a knockdown. Now you watch these flowing moves and beautiful angles. You can see them on Sunday mornings at Hackney Marshes, but certainly in League Two.
You can. I mean, you know, a few qualifiers to say, first of all, we did then lose at home to Salford City on Saturday. So HMS Piss the League has once more returned to harbour. Also, we've spent a lot of games this season trying to play that kind of football and not really being able to break teams down, arguably being too pretty, too patient. But last week against Walsall, it came together. We actually have got a knock it up to the big centre forward who'll knock it down type. He was instrumental in a lot of it. But then we've also got a very exciting low knee from Aston Villa called Louis Barry. I dare say he'll be going to Man City for 100 million in a couple of years' time and answering questions about his favourite kite to children in Dubai. But for the moment, we've got him. He scored twice. A young man called Ricky Aguiar scored twice. The third goal, I can't steer you sort of vehemently enough towards a video of our third goal. It was heaven. And I wasn't there, and I could have gone, but I chose not to go for admin reasons, and I think that was the single greatest factor in it being 5-0 to Swindon.
Ivo's not here. Let's turn it on. We all have these feelings, don't we, Reece, from time to time, where we think, oh, we matter, and the players, you know, if we're not there, we'll maybe they'll play better without us. But if you've seen the Swindon goal, Reece, it's a thing of beauty.
Yeah, contrary to what Ivo claimed earlier, I haven't blocked him. I do follow. I'm a keen follower, actually, of Ivo. And I watch all the Swindon content. I was born in Swindon, so I have a slight affinity to them. Couldn't name a single player and don't really mean what I just said. But I did watch the goal. And now that Ivo has said that, you know, they played that amazing football, they won 5-0 and then went and lost a game they maybe shouldn't have the next game, they feel like a club for me. This feels like my sort of team. Very Spursy.
Yes, and no doubt we'll be seeing Louis Barry pass the soap to Jack Grealish at some point as well. As we're talking, Swindon, let's test Ivo's knowledge on the Robins. Three questions on Swindon and two, in fact, on general knowledge. Before we start, I should apologise to the countless numbers of you who wrote to me on Twitter, two people actually, saying we got one of the questions wrong last week. It was about Dennis Wise being player manager of the runners-up in the FA Cup 2004. And we mistakenly said it was 2005. The guilty researcher has been sacked, stripped of all his possessions and forced to wander the continent as a pariah, denied food, water and fire. It's the only way they'll learn. Ivo, question one. Swindon have a proud history of winning trophies, but how many Wiltshire County FA Senior Cups have they won?
I think this is really a question about how long the Wiltshire Cup has existed as an institution, because you've got to feel we'd be dominating it for its entire shelf life. I think it's had a short shelf life, and I'm going to say two.
No, it's 10. 10.
Right.
Most not, recently you have to say in 1920. Okay. I can't believe you haven't got video footage of that. Swindon have had five different kit badges since their inception, but what year did they settle on their current logo?
Ooh. Well, this logo is a very standard sort of four quarters with a little thing on the bottom. It has updated a little bit season by season. It's not really exactly the same, but I think you're asking me when it moved from this sort of very, very sort of specific diamond vibe. And I'm going to say 2008.
Oh, seven.
Oh. Oh, dear.
That's just funny. That's just funny. To say it like that, eight. Unlucky, though. Good effort. All right. This question three is, I think, the favourite question we've ever had on this show. Swindon won the 1970 Anglo-Italian Cup, beating Napoli in the final. But what was the final score?
I should know that. I've got the programme.
They don't write the final score in the programme, though, I don't think, generally.
No.
That's a fair point.
So, I don't know, and I'm going to say 3-1 just in tribute to the FA Cup final the year before.
So the League Cup 3-0. Final. 3-0. The game was abandoned on the 79th minute as Napoli fans tore apart the stadium and threw things at the players. They were disgruntled with the home team being dismantled by Swindon. Outrageous. Couple of general knowledge for you. What was the longest period of time that Celtic and Rangers went without either one winning the league title?
Ever.
All yes. of history until the Scottish Premiership was invented, for a start. So millions of years is the longest time. If
since
we're going to be
Jurassic
as pedantic.
Period.
Yeah, it's still me, though, isn't it?
It is.
Since
yes.
Troy. I'm trying to help you out here, man. I gave you Frank Terry.
I'm going to think of the Ferguson-Aberdeen years as yes. being the biggest bin. I'm going to say they won the league three times in a row. So I'll say 3 years.
Absolutely right. 3 years. 1983, 84 and 85. Dundee United and Aberdeen kept the Glasgow sides from the top. And the final question. The League and Cup double is a spectacular achievement. But how many times have a team done the double of being runner-up in both competitions in the same season?
I mean, this is just to pluck a number out of the air. And so my chosen number is 3.
Oh, no, it's 11 times. Most recently, Manchester United in 2018. Ivo scored 1 point, and a very well-earned point. I think he was a bit unlucky with a couple of the others. After the break, we'll see how Rhys gets on. The final part of the football's on. Before the break, Ivo scored 1 point. Now it is the turn of Rhys James. Rhys, Spurs played in the first all-major European Cup final, but who were their opponents? I know this.
Do you?
Yeah, I was at the game.
What were you doing there? Is it Arsenal?
No, it's
it
not.
Was.
What were you doing there?
What were you doing there? Can you repeat the question, actually?
Yes, Spurs played in the first all-English major European Cup final, but who were their opponents?
Oh, right. No, it's not, is it? I'm never going to be able to speak to my father again. Liverpool.
It's Wolves, mate. Mm. Wolves.
Yeah, it is.
1972.
And we won.
I went to the lane.
Won.
I think my dad took me.
Because we win trophies. We're a trophy-winning team, and we won that. Thank you very much.
My dad took me to the lane. I'm not quite sure why.
Had you wronged him in some way?
I think it was more, see, this is how bad it could get.
Yeah.
Something like that.
As we
never moan to me again. All right. How about this one, Rhys? How many times have Tottenham won the Community Shield? It's also the Charity Shield back in the day. How many times have they won it?
Well, I would have thought zero.
No. They've won it seven times.
Seven times?
Yeah, well, I know.
Where's this opportunity come from? I know we've, you know, I know we've won the FA Cup a few times, but
yeah, every time you win the FA Cup, you
we've
win.
We've won the Charity Shield every time we've won the FA Cup. Good grief!
We've won the Wiltshire Cup 10 times, Rhys. It's a big day for both of us.
I knew the answer to that question.
All right, unlucky. Number three, Spurs were founded in 1882. However, they only started wearing white shirts in 1898. What colour did they have before? I mean, considering you didn't know who they beat in the 1972 UEFA Cup final or Fairs Cup final, but what colour were the shirts before 1898?
I found your question confusing, and that's why I asked you to repeat it, OK? I found the wording confusing. If you'd clarified by maybe repeating some of the words in a sort of Troy Trojan way, I might have understood. But in the moment, I thought it was a bit of word trickery and you meant all English, European. I got confused, thought you meant Champions League. OK, anyway, yellow.
No, navy.
Navy is the home kit.
Yes, apparently so. Good all right, we've got a couple of general knowledge.
But you've got to, wait, to be fair to me, it was all in black and white. So how would I possibly have known that?
That's a fair point. If only there was some way I could compensate you. But there isn't. Who is the odd one out? This is general knowledge now. Who's the odd one out, Rhys? Mike England, Alan Brazil, Stephen Ireland or Joe Jordan?
Who's the first person you said again?
Mike England.
Mike England is the odd one out.
Because?
Wait. Joe Jordan's the odd one out.
No. Stephen Ireland is the...
Why is
you can't go for all of them.
There's two reasons that it could have been the others. What's the reason for Stephen Ireland?
Stephen Ireland is the only one to play for the country that matches his surname.
Yeah.
I like that question. Yeah. Mike Great England question. Is Welsh.
Great question.
Alan Brazil is not Brazilian. He's Scottish. And Joe Jordan is actually from Oman.
My initial instinct was baldness. But there we go.
Yeah, that was an interesting idea as well. Number five. Great Britain haven't often competed in the football at the Olympic Games in recent history, but back when the Olympics started, they were regulars. How many times have the men's team won the gold medal?
Ivo, you're going to win this with 1 point. What an absolute nightmare this has been. Again, my instinct is zero. I'm going zero.
Your instincts are not helping you today. It was three. We won it in 1900, 1908 and 1912.
I should know. I was there.
Rhys scored 0 points, 1-0 to Ivo Graham.
Nice Matt work, Holland. Matt Holland, that's another one.
Yeah, nice.
Sorry, that's all I've been thinking about for the last 2 minutes.
I could have used him. Let's have a little chat about fan culture. And who better to do that than Swindon Town's fourth most famous fan after Willie Carson, Jamie Cullum, and of course, Daisy May Cooper. Yes, it's Liza Minnelli.
Come on, the Robins.
Okay, I'm a Swindon Town fan for life. We know this. We know this, Mama. And that means Oxford fans can get out right now. No, I'm deadly serious. I always say I won't have one in the house. One time, I found out I was married to one. Yes, husband number three. As soon as I found out, I said to him, "Divorce! Never darken my towels again, scum. Scum." Do you know the best thing about being a football fan? It's away days. Oh, it really is. I love it. Hopping on the coach and getting the hell on it. Beer for the boys. A champagne for Liza. Oh, and when you walk into the ground, you're getting yourself a hot pie. In fact,
I make you two.
I'm Liza Minnelli, so of course I love a team chant.
Swindon Town, Swindon Town FC. They're by far the greatest team the world has ever seen.
I am old, they should bring football chants into other sporting arenas. Golf.
The curling. A dressage. Come on, you horses.
That was Liza Minnelli, a.k.a. Suze Kempner. Ivo, you must have seen Liza at away games, leading the singing, scaring people in local shopping centres.
Oh, absolutely. She leads the ultras. Never misses an away game. But don't get us started on that third husband. A lot of the other Swindon ultras think that if you've ever been married to an Oxford fan, you shouldn't be allowed to show your face at the county ground again. But you can't argue with divorce.
Rhys, do you go away with Spurs? I mean, you never know what you're going to get.
Yeah, occasionally I went to watch us play Huddersfield a few years ago on my own. Lovely day out. The chance rung out 4-0 and Sissoko scored. So it was that kind of game. Also went to see us just scrape through in the Champions League group stage with a 1-1 draw at Barcelona, in which I was... The away stand bit in Barcelona is the highest bit of the stadium.
And
I was on the back row, which isn't massively well protected. And I felt like, you know, when Ned Flanders' wife is killed because a T-shirt hits her from a T-shirt cannon and knocks her off the back. I was like, any minute, if anything exciting happens, I'm going to stand up and just fall off the back of this stadium. But I didn't. And also, I was there in that moment where the Spurs players were on the pitch celebrating, pointing at the fans because the fans were reacting to the fact that Inter had drawn their game, which meant that we qualified. Now, I knew for a fact when I was watching them point at us going, listen, we must have qualified, and then jumping around, that match had not yet finished. And the false information we had got is it's still 1-1. And it could have been. It would have been very Spursy for Inter to have suddenly scored and that would just be a viral clip forever of Jan Vertonghen hugging Toby Alderweireld going, oh my God, we've done it because of us. Because of us celebrating early, the Spurs way.
I just would have loved if there was a picture of all the Tottenham fans jumping up and down and you at the back going, No.
I don't want to be Maud Flanders.
Okay. Quick round the block with this week in history. 28th of February 2005. Delia Smith on the pitch at Carrow Road at half time. All that. Where are you? Ivo, one can't imagine Stan Kroenke doing that at Arsenal. Hey guys, where are you?
Especially in that accent. Imagine it until then. That's the beauty of a host with such a gift for mimicry. Is nothing is beyond the imagination.
It was almost like you were there, wasn't it?
It's almost like I was there at the hypothetical event. I think it's an iconic moment, of course, and one which may have been a source of embarrassment to certain Norwich fans. Now you're at the maybe sort of opposite end of the spectrum where you've got protests. I think there were protests against Delia Smith a few weeks ago. You know, she was running a club without enough fight. What do you want from Delia? I remember in quite a low point of my mid-20s existence, looking up a Delia Smith recipe of how to make scrambled eggs. And it says, you want to make the pan as hot as you dare. And I think about that every single time I make scrambled eggs. I think of Delia saying, hot as you dare. Wow. As I turn it up to sort of medium
vague.
Hot. And I'm like, that's as much as I dare, Delia.
Exactly. How about this one? 29th of February 2004, Middlesbrough won the Carling Cup. They beat Bolton 2-1 at Wembley. And the only reason they did that, I know Middlesbrough fans might not like this, it was because they beat Arsenal in the semi-final because Arsene Wenger played a weakened team because we had a Champions League game that week. Mm. This is really not sour grapes, Middlesbrough fans. More an apology for people thinking that Steve McLaren was good enough to manage England. I'm essentially apologising, Rhys.
Listen, I've heard it all before, Ian. Oh, we were playing the kids. It was a weakened team. Well, maybe learn from history and stop doing that. And then you might prevent a catastrophic England several years that follow. Okay, if you keep behaving like this, Arsenal, and that's you, Ian, I'm referring to you as all of Arsenal now, then you are going to keep ending up in textbooks in events leading up to categories. In this case, being England continuing to be crap for ages. Look, I'm not going to lay into Middlesbrough here. At the time of recording, Spurs are due to play Middlesbrough in the FA Cup, and I don't feel confident. So there's no way I'm about to criticise Middlesbrough. They're a fine team, and I wish them the best after this evening. But, Steve McLaren is... I think he's a bit of a gift. He wasn't a gift to England, obviously, but managing other clubs, he's a bit of a gift. The Dutch accent, we all watch that clip on repeat. I mean, I like these meme managers every now and then. You know, you want a manager to come along every now and then who crouches down, sits on a bucket, does a weird Dutch accent. You know, you want these maniacs, people who get a mad hair transplant and say, maybe I'm not good enough to manage at this terrible club. You know, you want these maniacs coming in and igniting the game.
Yes, well, that's a perfect way to end the show, yeah. I would say. That is it for the Football's On. Thanks to Ivo Graham, Rhys James and Suze Kempner. We will be back next week.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.